They sat there for half a minute, both of them reevaluating things and trying to find a doorway back into the conversation. Finally, the artist said, "The Lost Girl. My end of the bargain." "The Lost Girl," Benny agreed. "Tell me that she's real." "She's real." Benny closed his eyes for a moment, then opened them and looked down at the card. "Tell me she's alive."
"That I can't say for sure," said Sachetto. But when Benny looked up at him, his eyes filling with dread, the artist shook his head.
"No, I mean that I can't say for sure how she is today, this minute. But she was alive and well a couple of months ago."
"How do you know?" demanded Benny.
"Because I saw her," said the artist.
"You saw her?"
"Once. Just for a minute. Maybe half a minute, but yeah. I saw her out in the ruin, and I came back and painted her. Tom helped me remember a few details, but that card there, that's her to a T."
"You were with Tom when you saw her?"
Sachetto paused, his fingers beating a tattoo on the tabletop. "Look, I know I promised to tell you, and I will. But I think I'm only going to tell you some of it. The rest? Well, maybe you better hear that from your brother."
"From Tom? Why?"
The artist cleared his throat. "Because Tom's been hunting her for 5 years." Chapter 17. The artist poured himself a third cup of coffee, thought about it, then got up and fetched a bottle of bourbon from a cupboard and poured a healthy shot into his cup. He didn't offer the bottle to Benny, who was fine with that. The stuff smelled like old socks.
"I grew up in Canada," Sachetto said.
"Toronto. I came to the States when I was fresh out of art school, and for a while I made money doing quick portraits of tourists on the boardwalk in Venice Beach. Then I took a couple of courses in forensic art and landed a job working for the Los Angeles Police Department. You know, doing sketches of runaways, of suspects, that sort of stuff. I was always good at asking the right questions, so I could get inside the head of a witness to a crime or a family member who was looking for someone. And I never forget a face. I was in a police station on first night. Lots of cops around me. Lots of guns. It's how I survived." Benny didn't know how this was going to relate to the Lost Girl, but the artist was in gear now, and he didn't want to interrupt the man's flow. He placed the card on the table between them and sat back to listen. Sachetto sipped his spiked coffee, hissed, and plunged back in. "You grew up after, kid. So all you know about is this world. The world after. And I know you've probably learned a lot about the world before the fall in school, or from hearing people talk. So you probably have a sense of it, but that's really not the same thing as having belonged to that world. You live here in town, with a slice of what's left of the population. What's our head count at the New Year's census? 8,000? When I was working on the boardwalk, I'd see three times that many people just sprawled in the sand, soaking up the sun. The freeways were packed with tens of thousands of cars, horns blaring, people yelling. I used to hate the crowd, hate the noise. But, man, once it was all gone, I've missed it every day since. The world is too quiet now." Benny nodded, but he didn't agree. There was always something happening in town. Always some noise or chatter. The only quiet he'd heard was out in the ruin. "When the dead rose, the noise changed from the sound of life in constant motion to the sound of the dying in panicked flight. I heard the first screams just as the sun was setting. A guy in the drunk tank died from a beating he'd gotten when he'd been mugged. I guess the cops didn't realize how hurt he was. They thought he was asleep on the bunk,
didn't know he was dead. Then he woke up, if that's the right word. Resurrected is closer, I guess. Or maybe there should have been new words for it. If there'd been time, if the world had lasted longer, I'm sure there would have been all sorts of new words, new slang. Thing is, the Zoms, they weren't really back from the dead, you know? They were the dead. It's been 14 years, and the idea still won't fit into my head. He closed his eyes for a moment, looking inward, or backward, at images that even his artist's imagination could not reconcile. The lost girl, Benny prompted gently. Right. That was later. Let me get to it how I need to get to it, because one thing leads to another, and if I tell it out of order, you might not understand. He took another sip of coffee. The guy in the cell started biting the other drunks. Everybody was screaming. The cops thought they had a nutcase on their hands, so they did what they were trained to do. They unlocked the cell to try and break up the fight. But by then, at least one or two of the other drunks were dead from bites to their throats or arteries. It was a mess. Blood all over the walls and floor, grown men screaming, cops shouting. But I just stood there staring. All of the colors, you know. The bright red, the pale white of bloodless skin, the gray lips and black eyes, the blue of the police uniforms, the blue-white arcs of electricity as they used tasers. In a weird, sick way, it was beautiful. Yeah, I can see the look in your eyes, and I know how crazy that sounds, but I'm an artist. I guess we're all a little crazy. I see things the way I see them. Besides, I was around death and dying all the time. I was around pain and loss all the time. This was so real. So immediate. Even working with the police, I'd never been there at the moment a crime was committed. And here it was. Murder and mayhem being played out in all the colors in my paint box. I was transfixed. I couldn't move. And then the dead drunks woke up, and they started biting the cops. After that, the colors blurred, and I don't remember much except that there was screaming and gunfire. The younger cops and all of the support staff, the people who weren't street cops, they went crazy. Screaming, running, crashing into one another. It made it easier for the dead to catch them. And the more people they bit, the more the situation went all to hell. A cop I knew, a woman named Terry, grabbed my sleeve and pulled me away a second before one of the zombies could take a bite out of me. She shoved me down a side hall, the hall that led to the parking lot. She told me to get into my car and get the motor running. Then she turned and went back down the hall to get some other people out. He sighed. I never saw her again. All I heard was gunfire and the moans of the dead. Is that where it all started? Benny asked. The artist shrugged. I don't think so. Over the years, you talk to people and you hear 100 stories about how it all started. You know what I really think? Benny shook his head. I think that it doesn't matter one little bit. It happened. The dead rose, we fell. We lost the war and we lost the world. End of story. How it happened doesn't matter much to anyone anymore. We're living next door to the apocalypse, kid. It's right on the other side of that big fence. The rotten ruin is the real world. Our town isn't anything more than the last bits of mankind's dream. And we're stuck here until we die off. You always this depressing, or is it that crap you poured in your coffee? Sachetto tilted his head to one side and stared at Benny for a 10 count before a slow smile formed on his mouth. Subtlety's not your bag, is it, kid? It's not that, said Benny. It's just that I'm 15, and I have this crazy idea I might actually have a life in front of me. I don't see how it's going to do me much good to believe that the world is over and this is just an epilogue.
Sachetto chuckled.
You're smarter than I thought you were. Maybe I should have given you the job.
I don't want it anymore. I just want to know about the lost girl.
And I'm wandering around everywhere but in the direction of the point. Is that it?
Benny gave an if-the-shoe-fits kind of shrug.
Okay. Long story short, I got the hell out of Dodge.
Dodge?
Out of L.A. No one else came out of the police station. At least no one alive. After I sat in my car for 10 minutes, I saw the desk sergeant come shambling out. His face was smeared with red, and he was holding something in his hands. I think it was a leg. He was taking bites out of it. I spewed my lunch out the side window, backed the hell up, spun the wheel, and burned half a block's worth of rubber before getting out of there. I had 3/4 of a tank of gas, and I was driving a small car, so I made it pretty far. To this day, I couldn't tell you the route I took getting out of L.A. The streets were already going crazy, but I beat the traffic jams that totally locked down the city. Someone told me later that thousands of people were trapped in their cars on blocked streets, and that the dead just came up and... well, it was like a buffet. He shook his head, sipped some coffee, and continued. I passed under a wave of army helicopters flying in formation toward downtown. Had to be 100 of them. Even with the windows closed and the sound of rotors, I could hear the gunfire as they opened up on the city. When my car ran out of gas, I was actually surprised. I was in shock. I never even looked at the gauge. I ran the tank dry and then started running. I got to a farmhouse and met up with some other people, other refugees. 15 of us at first. This was around midnight now. By dawn, there were 7 left. One of the refugees had a bite, you see, and we still weren't connecting the bites with whatever was going on. To us, it still wasn't the dead rising. We thought it was an infection that made people go crazy and act violent. A few people had cell phones, but everyone they called was just as confused as they were. All the lines to police or government were jammed or were down. People kept trying, though. We were all conditioned to believe that our little phones and PDAs would always keep us connected, and they'd always be a pathway to a solution. I guess you don't even know what those things are, but it doesn't matter. The batteries eventually ran down, and, as you do know, help never came. Everybody was in the same mess. At dawn, a bunch of hunters came through the area and began clearing out the zombies. We thought that it was over, that somehow the good guys had gotten ahead of it. We went the opposite way, thinking we were heading in the direction of safety, of order. We didn't get 2 miles before we hit a wall of them. Zombs?
Zombs. Maybe 10,000-15,000 of them. God only knows where they came from. Some city or town. Or maybe they started out as a few and the others followed with them, tracking movement the way the Zombs will. Don't know. Don't care. We kept running, kept trying to hide, but they smelled us, or heard us. They kept coming. We picked up a couple more survivors, and at one point we were back up to close on 100 people. But like I said, there were thousands of them. Thousands. They were in front of us, behind us, on both sides. They came at us from everywhere, and we died. I was in the center of our pack, and that was the only reason I survived. The dead kept dragging down the people on the edges of the pack, and with every few 100 yards, we lost another couple of people. Sure, we were faster, and one-on-one we were stronger,
but we had no clear path to make a straight run for it. Then we went down into a valley near a vineyard. By now our group was down to 25, give or take. We'd started arming ourselves. Rocks and tree branches, a few farm tools we found. A couple people had guns, but the ammunition had run out long ago. The valley had a stream running through it, and we splashed across. That helped. I think the dead lost the scent, or maybe it was the sound of the stream. Those of us who crossed where the water churned over some rocks, where it was noisy, we got across without being chased. Seven of us made it to safety that way. Me, four men, and a woman and her little daughter. The woman, though, she was pregnant, 2 days away from her due date. Two of the men had to hold onto her arms to help her run, and I carried the little girl. We ran and ran, and even though the little girl was only 2 years old, after 1,000 yards it felft like she weighed 100 pounds. He stopped for a moment, and Benny saw a shadow was moving across his face. "I've never been a strong person, Ben. Not physically, and not... well, let's just say not everyone's as strong as your brother." He looked suddenly gray and sick, and older than his 50 years. He drained the cup and turned to stare longingly at the bottle of bourbon on the drain board, but he didn't get up to fetch it. Benny watched the emotions that flowed over the man's face. The artist was one of those people who had no poker face at all. Everything he felt, everything he'd ever seen, was there to be read. After another few moments, Sachetto continued his story. Somehow, maybe it was fear or adrenaline, or maybe we'd gone completely crazy, we kept running. 4 or 5 miles on the other side of the vineyard, we found a cottage. Pretty little place, tucked into the woods. We managed to get the pregnant woman into it, and we locked the door, closed the shutters, and pushed all the furniture against any opening where the dead could get in. There was food and water and a TV and a laptop. The owners were nowhere around. While the others helped the woman settle down on the couch, I turned on the TV, but all we got was a "please stand by" message from the emergency broadcast system. So I turned on the computer and skimmed the news. The internet was still up. "Do you know about the internet?" "Yeah, they cram all that old world stuff into our heads at school." Sachetto nodded. "Well, I was able to access news feeds from all over the world. By then it was everywhere. I mean, everywhere. Europe, Asia, Africa. Cities were in flames. Some areas had gone completely dark. The military was in the field, and the authorities were saying they were making headway, pushing back the dead, stopping their advance." He shrugged. "Maybe it was true at the time. My cell phone was back at the police station, but I sent emails to everyone I knew. I didn't get very many replies. Those that did get back to me said it wasn't happening where they were, but as the day went on, they stopped replying to my emails. The situation kept getting worse and worse until it was spinning completely out of control. The news reports were all mixed up, too. Some of them said the dead were moving fast. Some of them said they couldn't be killed, even with headshots. One reporter, a guy who was a really well-known news anchor from New York, reported that his own family had been slaughtered, and then he shot himself right on camera." "God," Benny said breathlessly. The artist snorted. "I was never much of a believer, kid. But if there ever was a God, then he wasn't on the clock that night. That's something you can debate at Sunday school. For my part, I don't see much evidence of any divine hand in what happened."
"What happened then?" asked Benny.
Sachetto took a breath. I stayed glued to the internet all day, mostly watching news feeds of these huge battles in New York and Philadelphia, in Chicago and San Francisco, and overseas. London, Manchester, Paris, everywhere. One field reporter, a woman who was braver and crazier than I ever was, got all the way into Washington, D.C. when the Air Force tried to reclaim the city. Jets were laying down napalm, and I saw whole masses of zombies burning on the lawn in front of the White House. They were still walking toward the troops who were making a stand on the other side of the mall, but they burned as they did so, dropping to the ground as their tendons melted. Crawling until the fire destroyed too much of their muscles, or maybe till it boiled their brains. Wave after wave of helicopters fired on them. The helicopters hovered 10 feet above their heads and used machine guns. Miniguns, I think they're called. Firing hundreds of rounds per minute, tearing the zombies to pieces. I guess if you went by that footage, then it looked like we were winning. But I sat at that computer for more than 20 hours, and one by one, the news feeds went offline. Then the power went out, and we got no news after that. The TV, it never came back on, so when we lost power, it was useless anyway. Even though Sachetto spoke of places Benny had never seen and technology that no longer existed, the images of carnage and desperation filled Benny's mind. When they were out in the ruin, Tom had reminded him that there had been more than 300 million people living in the United States on first night. The thought of all those people, fighting and dying in just a few days. It made Benny feel sick and small. "What about the pregnant lady?" he asked after a long silence.
"Yeah. Well, that's the real story. That's the story you want to hear."
"What do you mean?"
"That woman. She gave birth that night. There was a daybed that we wheeled out into the living room and made her as comfortable as possible, but we didn't know what we were doing.
I sure as hell didn't. The others helped.
I just couldn't. You'd think someone who was around blood all the time, sketching crime scenes and all, you'd think I could take the blood and mess from her giving birth. But I couldn't. I'm not proud, and I don't even understand that about myself. But there it is. I was still cruising the net when I heard the baby cry. It was right about then, right after the baby started crying, that the first of the dead began pounding on the door.
The baby?
It was a girl, Sachetto said, but he looked away. We didn't know the mother had been bitten.
God!
Benny's mouth went dry, and when he tried to swallow, it felt like he had a throat full of broken glass.
The baby, too? Was it a...
Benny couldn't make his mouth shape the word, but Sachetto shook his head.
No.
I know there have been a lot of stories about infected mothers giving birth to babies who were, monsters. But that's not what happened. He cleared his throat. Years later, when I told this story to Doc Gurajala, he said that maybe the disease, or whatever it was, either couldn't cross the placental wall or didn't have time to do it. The woman must have been bitten when we were breaking through the crowds of zombies. None of us noticed.
What happened?
Well, the infection had already taken hold. We missed it because she was already sweating and moaning from the hard delivery, and we still didn't understand what we were up against. When they started cleaning her up, she just... died. She fell back against the bed and let out this long, sputtering exhale. It was horrible to hear. It was a series of clicks in the throat as that last breath came out of her. They call that sound a death rattle, but that's too ordinary a phrase for the sound that I heard. It sounded more like fingernails scraping on a hardwood floor, like her spirit was clawing at life, trying to stay in her body. Benny felt the skin of his arms rise with ripples of goose flesh. By that time, I'd seen hundreds of people die and had seen thousands of zombies. But that death was the worst, said the artist. And after all these years, it's still the worst. That poor woman had fought her way out of Los Angeles, had saved her daughter and struggled to survive long enough to bring her baby into the world, and when she'd succeeded, when she was safe, death just dragged her away. He abruptly stood and walked over to the counter, snatched up the bottle and stared at it. He set it down again, thumping the heavy glass against the countertop. "That baby," Benny asked tentatively, "did she live? And is she the girl on the card? Is she the lost girl?" Sachetto turned, surprised. "No, she was too young. She'd be only 14 now."
"Then I don't understand."
"It was her sister," said the artist. "The little girl who was on the run with her mother. Lila."
"Lila," Benny echoed.
The name was a cool breeze in the middle of the heat of Sachetto's terrible story. She watched her sister being born, and she watched her mother die. Poor little kid. She was only 2, so all the screaming and blood must have hit her really hard. Before, while we were still running, while I was carrying her, she was talking. Some words, but mostly nonsense stuff. Kid stuff. After that last breath, the little girl screamed for 5 minutes. She screamed herself raw, and then she stopped talking. For how long? The artist looked away again. I don't know. The rest of that night is kind of a blur. The dead surrounded the place. I think they were drawn to the cottage because of the screams. And after, by the smell of blood.
What happened to the mother?
Sachetto still didn't meet his eyes. She woke up, of course. She woke up, and for an insane moment we thought that she was still alive, you know? That she hadn't died, that we were wrong about it. He laughed a short, ugly laugh. She bit one of the men. He was bent forward, trying to talk to her, trying to reach her, and she craned her neck forward and bit him. Then we knew.
What did you do?
What we had to do. He came slowly back to the table and sat down. We still had our weapons, the sticks, the rocks, the empty guns. He could not say it. And Benny did not need it said. They sat together for a while, listening to the wind-up clock on the wall chip seconds off the day. Near dawn, the artist said at length. One of the others said he was going to try and make a break for it. He said that the creatures outside were slow and stupid. He was a big guy. He'd played football in high school and was in really good shape. He said that he was going to break through their lines and find some help. Everyone tried to talk him out of it, but not as hard as we could have. It was the only plan anyone had. In the end, we all went into the living room and banged on the doors and walls, yelling real loud. The zombies came shuffling from all sides of the house. I don't know how many. 50? 100? When the back was mostly clear, the young guy went out through the back door at a dead run. He was fast, too. I closed the door and looked through the crack and watched him in the light of the false dawn, as he knocked the zombies away and rushed into the darkness.
What happened to him? What do you think?
Sachetto snapped, then softened his tone. There was nowhere to run to. We never saw him again.
Oh.
It was almost a full day later when another one of us tried it. A small guy who used to manage a Starbucks in Burbank. He made a torch out of a table leg and some sheets that he'd soaked in alcohol. He didn't run fast enough, though. And that myth about the zombies being afraid of fire, that's stupid. They can't think or feel. They're not afraid of anything. They surrounded him. Before he fell, the little guy must have set fire to a dozen of them. But the others got him. Benny looked down at the card that lay on the table before him.
You said that seven of you made it to the cottage.
Six adults plus the little girl. And the baby made eight. The mother died. So did the guy she bit. And you know what's really sad? I never learned either of their names. The little girl only knew her mother as Mama. We couldn't even respect their deaths with their names. Maybe that doesn't seem important, but it mattered to us. To me.
No, said Benny,
remembering Tom reading the note to Harold Simmons.
I get it. It matters.
Sachetto nodded. So that left two of us. Me and the last guy. A shoe salesman named George played rock, paper, scissors to see who'd try next. Imagine that. Two grown men playing a kid's game during the apocalypse to decide which one was probably going to live and which one was almost certainly going to die. It's comedy.
But it's not funny, said Benny.
No, said the artist. No, it sure as hell isn't. Mostly because neither of us really thought we were going to live. We just didn't want to be the next to die.
You won?
No, he said. I lost. I was the one who had to try. George stayed back there with the two kids. I tore up a throw rug and wrapped strips of it around my arms and put on a thick winter coat I found in the closet. When I told Tom all this, he joked that maybe I invented carpet coats. Whatever. I wound five scarves around my face. All I left free were my legs. I found a bag of golf clubs in a closet and I took two metal putters, one for each hand. George went through the same ritual, banging on the front door. Zombies are as dumb as they are dangerous. They came lumbering around to the front of the house, and I went out the back. I heard the baby crying and George yelling, but I didn't look back. I ran. Kid, I ran for my life, and that's what chews me up every day and night since.
I don't understand.
The artist gave him a bleak smile. I ran for my life. Not theirs. Not for George or the little kid or the baby. I ran to save my own sorry ass. I ran and ran and ran. On good nights, when I can find a little scrap of self-respect, I tell myself that I ran so far because I couldn't find anyone else alive, closer to the cottage. But that's not entirely true. At least I don't know if it's true. I saw smoke a couple of times, and I heard gunfire. I could have gone there and maybe found some people who were still alive and fighting, but I was too scared. If there was gunfire, then they had to be firing at the zombies, and that scared me too much. I was crying and talking to myself as I ran, making up lies to convince myself that the little kids back in the house were safe. that the hunters or soldiers or whoever was firing the guns would find them in time. I ran and ran and ran. He stopped and sighed again. At nights I slept in barns or in drainage ditches. I don't know how many days I ran. Too many, I guess. Then one morning I heard voices, and when I crept out of my hiding place, I saw a party of armed men walking down the road. More than 60 of them, with a couple of soldiers and a few cops leading the way. I rushed out at them, screaming incoherently. They nearly shot me, but I managed to get out a few words in time. They gathered around me, gave me some food and water, and grilled me on where I'd been and what I'd seen. I don't think I made a whole lot of sense, but when I was finally able to get myself together enough to tell them about the cottage, I realized that I had no idea where it was. I wasn't familiar with this part of California, and I sure as hell hadn't paid attention to the crazy path I took. They had a map, and I tried to figure it out, but it was hopeless.
What happened?
He shook his head. They never found the cottage. Not while I was with them, anyway. A party of about a dozen went to look for it, but they never came back. The main group pushed on, and after a week of fighting and running, we found a reservoir with a high chain-link fence and mountains behind it. It was defensible, and it became a rallying point for survivors.
You mean here? That's how this town was started?
Yes. I helped reinforce the fence and dig earthworks and build shelters. I worked as hard as I could each day, every day. And except for a couple of very short trips into the ruin with Tom, I never left this town again. I don't think I ever will.
What about the little girls? What about Lila?
Sachetto sat back. Well, kid, that's where I left the story of the lost girl, and that's where Tom entered it. You're going to have to get the rest from him. Benny got up and fetched the coffee pot. He poured the artist a fresh cup and set the bottle of whiskey down next to it. The artist stared at the bottle for a while, then poured some into his coffee, sipped it, then got up and poured the coffee out into the sink.
"Thanks for telling me all this," said Benny. "Most people don't want to talk about first night, or what happened after. And those that do, they always make it sound like they were the heroes."
"Yeah. I sure as hell didn't do that."
"You didn't do anything wrong," said Benny.
The artist sneered. "I ran away and left an infant and a little girl in a house, surrounded by the living dead. I sure as hell didn't do anything right."
"Could you have carried them out? Both of them?"
Sachetto gave a single wretched shake of his head. Benny smiled at him.
"Then at least you tried to do what you could do," he said.
"Kid, I appreciate the effort, but that thought doesn't even get me through the night." He closed his eyes. Not one single night. Chapter 18.
"Talk to Tom," said the artist as he walked Benny to the door.
"If he's willing to talk about it, then he can tell you the rest of it."
"I will."
"You never did tell me, though.
What's your interest?"
"You don't know her. What's she to you?" Benny was expecting the question, but hoping it would slip by unasked.
He shrugged.
He took the card from his pocket and held it up so they could both look at the image.
"It's hard to put into words. I was sorting through the new cards with my crew, and I saw this one. There was something about it. Something about her.
He stopped, fishing for the right words,
but he came up empty. He shrugged. However, Sachetto surprised him by nodding. No, I get it, kid. She kind of has that effect on people. Sachetto opened the door to a bright spill of September sunlight. The light was clean and dry, and seemed to belong to a totally different world than the one Sachetto had talked about. They lingered in a moment of awkwardness, neither of them sure if this was the whole of their relationship, or the first chapter of an acquaintanceship that might last for years. "Sorry it didn't work out with the job," Sachetto said with a crooked smile. "Well, it's not like I'm invested in killing zombies. If you're hiring, I'm still "No," Sachetto interrupted. "I mean, I'm sorry your art kinda sucks. You're a nice kid. Easy to talk to. Easier to talk to than your brother."
"My art sucks?"
"You can draw," conceded the artist. "I just not very well."
Thanks?
"Would you rather I lie to you, kid?"
"Probably."
"Then you're Rembrandt and having you around would make me feel inferior."
"Better."
They grinned at each other. The artist held out a paint-stained hand and Benny shook it.
"I hope you find her."
"I will," said Benny.
That got a strange look from the artist, but before Benny could say anything, a voice behind them said,
"Well, well, what's that you got there?"
Benny knew the voice, and in the half second before he turned, he saw Sachetto's face tighten with fear. Benny turned to see Charlie Pinkeye, standing on the street right behind him. Next to him, smiling a greasy little smile, was the Motor City Hammer.
"What you holdin' there, young Benjamin?" said Charlie with the slick civility he used when he was setting up a bad joke, or something worse.
Benny was suddenly aware of the card. It was small, but at that moment it felt as big as a poster. His hand trembled as if the card itself felt exposed and nervous. The massive bounty hunter stepped closer, and his bulk blotted out the sun. It was weird. Benny liked Charlie and the Hammer. They were heroes to him. Or had been. Since the ruin, everything in his head was crooked, as if the furniture was the same, but the room had changed. The way these men were smiling at him, the way shadows seemed to move behind their eyes, it made Benny want to gag. There was nowhere to turn, no way to escape the moment unless Benny actually took off running, but that was not any kind of option. Charlie held out a hand for the card, but Benny's fingers pressed together to hold it more tightly. It wasn't a deliberate act of defiance. Even in the immediacy of the moment, he knew that much. It was more an act of...
of what?
Of protection? Maybe. He just knew that he did not want Charlie Pinkeye to have that card.
"It's just a card," Sachetto said.
"Like the ones I did of you and the Hammer. I did a couple new ones, you know, for extra ration bucks. It's nothing special."
"Nothing special?" said Charlie, his smile as steady and false as the painted grin on a doll. "Let's see. Shall we?"
Charlie reached for the card the same way Morgie had. Familiar, as if he had a right or an invitation born of a long-standing confidence. Benny was primed to react, and as the bounty hunter's fingers closed over a corner of the card, Benny whipped it away. Charlie grabbed nothing but air.
"No!"
blurted Benny, and he took a reflexive step backward, turning to shield the card with his body. The moment... every sound, every trembling leaf in the tree beside the house, even the wind itself, seemed to suddenly freeze in time. Charlie's eyes went wide. The Hammer and the artist wore identical expressions of complete surprise. Benny felt the blood in his veins turn to icy gutter water.
"Boy,"
said Charlie in a quiet voice that no longer held the lie of humor or civility.
I think you just made a mistake. I'll give you 1 second to make it right, and then we can be friends again. Hand me that card, and you better smile and say sir when you do.
Charlie did not make another grab, but the threat behind his words filled the whole street. Benny didn't move. He held the card down by his hip and out of sight. He flicked a glance at Sachetto, but the hammer was up in the artist's face, and he had his hand resting at the top of the black pipe he carried as a club. There was no help there.
Now, commanded Charlie.
He held out a huge, calloused hand, palm open and flat, to receive the card. A stiff breeze filled with heat and blowing sand suddenly whipped out of the west. The card fluttered between Benny's fingers.
Give him the card, Benny, urged Sachetto.
Listen to the man, agreed the hammer,
laying a hand on the artist's shoulder. The tips of his fingers dug wrinkled pits through the fabric of Sachetto's shirt. Charlie stretched his hand out until his fingers were an inch from Benny's face. The bounty hunter's skin smelled like gunpowder, urine, and tobacco.
Boy, Charlie whispered.
Benny raised the card. He did it slowly, holding it between thumb and forefinger, and all four of them watched it flutter like the wing of a trapped and terrified butterfly.
Give me the card, said Charlie in a voice as soft as the blowing wind.
No, said Benny, and he opened his fingers. The hot breeze whipped it away. The artist gasped. The hammer cursed. Charlie Pink Eye snaked a hand after it, but the card tumbled away from his scrabbling fingers. Benny almost cried out as the small rectangle of stiff cardboard and printer's ink tumbled over and over, bobbing like a living thing on the wind. It struck the sign at the corner of the artist's property, then dropped to the street where it skittered for a dozen yards before it came to a sudden stop, as a booted toe stepped down on it, pinning it to the hard-packed dirt. Benny, the artist, and the two bounty hunters had followed the card's progress with their eyes, and now, as one, they raised their eyes to look at the man who now stood in the street. The man bent and plucked the card from beneath his toe. He studied it for a moment, then blew dust and sand from its surface. He glanced over the card, then at the four people clustered together in front of the artist's door. He smiled and slid the card into his shirt pocket. It was the first time Benny had ever been glad to see him.
Tom,
Benny said. Chapter 19. Tom Amura was dressed in faded blue jeans and a green travel-stained safari shirt with a lot of pockets. He wore old boots, an ancient Pittsburgh Pirates ball cap, and a smile that was every bit as friendly and inviting as a pit viper's. As he strolled slowly toward the front of the house, Charlie and the hammer took small sideways steps to be clear of any obstructions. Both men wore knives on their belts. The hammer had his black pipe club, and Benny knew for certain that Charlie had a four-barreled Derringer in his boot top.
So, said Tom amiably,
what are we doing today?
The question sounded as ordinary as Nick's asking if Benny wanted to go swimming or Chong suggesting they entertain the trout down at the stream.
Just having a chat, Tom, said Hammer. Ain't nothing.
Happy to hear it, Marion.
Benny gasped. No one ever called the Hammer by his birth name. There was a story Morgie liked to tell about how when the Hammer turned 14, he killed his father with a screwdriver for giving him that name. And yet the Hammer didn't say a single word about it to Tom.
You doing okay, Benny?
Tom asked. Benny didn't trust his voice, so he gave a short jerk of a nod.
Rob?
Tom asked with an uptick of his chin.
The artist said, Just a friendly chat. The boys were passing the time of day.
Tom stopped a yard from Charlie. He shoved his hands into the back pockets of his jeans and looked up at the hard blue dome of the sky.
And it's a hot one, ain't it?
said Tom, squinting at a buzzard floating like a black kite high in the sky. Without looking down, he said, "I see they put the lost girl on a zombie cart. How about that?"
"She ain't none of your business, Tom," said Charlie with quiet menace.
Tom nodded as if agreeing, but he said, "I seem to remember you telling folks that the lost girl was just a myth. Or was it that she was dead 10 years ago and more?" Charlie said nothing. Tom finally lowered his eyes and turned toward Charlie. If there was anything to read in Tom's face, Benny wasn't able to see it. "And then I see you getting all worked up over her picture on a kid's trading card. What am I supposed to think about that?"
"Think what you like, Tom," said Charlie.
"Yeah," added the hammer with a laugh. "It's a free country."
The bounty hunters laughed, and Tom laughed with them, sharing a joke that clearly no one found funny. Benny shifted uncomfortably and threw an inquiring look at Sachetto, who returned the look with a shake of his head. "Charlie, you and Marion wouldn't be looking for the lost girl again, would you?"
"Can't look for someone who's dead," said the hammer.
"Seems to me that we do that all the time," said Tom. The hammer colored, annoyed with himself for a foolish comment. "The last time you were looking for her was after what happened up in the mountains. But you told me it was all an accident. It made me wonder then, as it does now, if the lost girl might have seen something she shouldn't have. Or some place she shouldn't have."
"There was nothing to see," Charlie growled. "Like I told you 12 times.
Tom shrugged. "And yet you get all worked up over her card. Why is that? Are you afraid that now she's on a card everyone will know that she really exists? That maybe someone will go looking for her? Maybe bring her back to town. Ask her about life out there in the rot and ruin. Maybe ask her about her sister? Ask her about Gameland?" Benny frowned. What was Gameland?
"Gameland burned down," said Charlie. "As you well know."
"Me? What do I know? As you said, Gameland burned down. Nothing left but cold ashes and a few bones. No way to tell who the bones belong to." Charlie said nothing. "Wonder if anyone ever rebuilt it," said Tom. "Oh, not where it used to be, but somewhere else. Somewhere secret. Somewhere that a wandering girl in the mountains might stumble upon." His voice was quiet, his tone mild, as if he and Charlie were passing the time of day talking about the price of corn. But Benny could see clouds forming on Charlie's face, darkening his expression. Lightning flashed in the bright blue eye, and fire seemed to burn in the pink eye. Charlie took a step toward Tom.
"You keep making accusations like that, Tom, and we might have to have a talk."
Tom smiled. "We are having a talk, Charlie, and I haven't made a single accusation. I'm just wondering out loud about why a busy man like you would be afraid of what's on a pasteboard card." Charlie took another step, and now his bulk blocked the sun and cast Tom completely in shadows.
"Don't mess with me, Tom. You got lucky once. Luck don't hold long these days."
Tom's smile never wavered. He took a single sideways step and looked around Charlie Mathias.
"Benny, it's past your time to come on home. We're supposed to be training today."
"Training?" said the hammer. "You're teaching this pup to hunt?"
Tom turned his smiling face to him, but he didn't answer. Benny caught the quick, sharp look that passed between the hammer and Charlie. Charlie edged another half step closer to Tom. He towered over Tom, but Benny's brother didn't back away and he didn't take his hands out of his back pockets.
"It's a risky business taking a young pup into the trade," said Charlie.
"He's of age," said Tom. "Got to earn his rations like everyone else."
"Yeah. But he looks a little soft to me. The ruin's a dangerous place."
"Benny's already been to the ruin, Charlie. He did just fine." Charlie's own smile returned as he looked at Benny.
You been out in a great zombie wonderland, kid?
When Benny said nothing, Tom surprised him by saying, Answer the man, Benny.
Yes.
Be polite, Benny, Tom chided.
Yes, sir.
Charlie nodded approval.
You got him trained good as a hunting dog.
Benny held his ground.
He's training me to be a hunter, he said with a growl. And we're going to find the lost girl and bring her back to town, and there's nothing you can do about it.
He didn't know why he said it, and even as he said it, he knew it wasn't true, but he wanted to wipe the smirk off of Charlie's face. His words did just that. Charlie's eyes hardened to stone, and he opened his mouth to say something. Tom put a hand on Benny's shoulder.
We'll be moving on home, fellas.
He turned, pulling Benny gently, but before they went 3 steps, Charlie said something quietly to the hammer, and they both laughed. It was a dark and ugly laugh, heavy and swollen with the promise of awful things. Benny tensed, wanting to turn, but Tom's hand was like iron on his shoulder.
Hey, Tom, called Charlie,
and Tom slowed and half turned to look back.
Best tell the pup to be real careful out in the ruin. Lots of things out there will take a bite out of fresh meat like him. Everything out there wants to kill you.
Tom stopped. He turned very slowly and looked at Charlie for several silent seconds, the smile still on his lips.
That's true, Charlie. Everything wants to kill you.
Then he turned, patted Benny on the shoulder, and started walking. As Benny turned away from the tableau, he got a brief look at Charlie's face. Did the big man's smile flicker? Did his eyes show some emotion other than predatory confidence? Benny couldn't be sure. He and Tom walked in silence all the way home. Chapter 20. When they reached the garden gate, Benny put his hand on the latch but didn't open it. He turned to his brother.
Okay, Benny demanded. What was that all about?
It's not about anything. Charlie and the hammer like to turn dials on people. You can't let them get under your skin.
What did you mean about the things the lost girl saw? About what she could tell people?
It's a bad world, Benny, was all Tom would say.
Then, what's game land?
It was clear Tom didn't want to answer, but eventually he said,
It's a place that shouldn't exist.
It's an abomination. Benny had never heard Tom use a word like abomination, let alone load a word with as much contempt. It used to be an amusement park, a place where people would come for a day of innocent fun. It was closed down for a couple of years before first night, but a few traders and bounty hunters found it and staked it out as theirs. Their version of it had nothing to do with family fun or innocence. Remember when I told you about how some of the bounty hunters have games where they put boys in pits with zombies? Benny nodded. He hadn't believed Tom at the time, and really hadn't given it much thought since. Now the idea of boys being tossed into pits with only a stick with which to defend themselves against zombies was almost overwhelmingly horrific. They used to do that kind of stuff at Gameland, and other stuff that's even worse. A lot worse. Bounty hunters, loners, and other people come from settlements all over this part of the state for these games. They bet on stuff like that. Z-games, they're called. He paused, and pain etched deep lines in his face. When Nix was little, and we had that really bad winter, you were 6 or 7, Charlie coerced Jesse Riley into going out to Gameland as a way of making enough ration dollars to feed her and Nix. Think about that, Benny. A grown woman, a mother, being forced to play Haunted House. A sick game where they make her go through a building filled with zombies and only a sawed-off baseball bat or a piece of pipe to defend herself.
No, Benny said. It was straight-up denial, a statement that such a thing could not be the truth, that it could never have been the truth. She had a little kid at home, Nix. Jessie was desperate. She couldn't let her daughter starve, and a parent will do anything to protect her child, even if doing those things rips away a piece of her soul. "I got her out of there," Tom said. "But she was never quite the same afterward."
"That's impossible. I mean, how can that be legal?"
"Legal?" Tom gave a bitter laugh. "There's no law past the fence line. What's done in the ruin stays in the ruin. On the other hand, if it became commonly known what sort of things do actually happen out there, then I doubt anyone involved would be allowed in Mountainside. Or in any town. There may be no law beyond the fence, but letting criminals live next door? Well, that's another matter." "But," he said with a sigh, "so far no one's been able to adequately prove a connection between Gameland and any of the bounty hunters who live here." Benny shook his head. The logic seemed twisted. "A few years ago," Tom continued, "someone set fire to the place and burned it down, and the owners moved the Z-Games to a new location. They kept its location secret. Gamblers and such are taken there in shrouded wagons, so they don't know where it is."
"Why?"
"Because whoever burned it down might want to do it again."
"Do you know who burned it?"
Tom didn't answer. Instead, he considered the sky. It was still blue, but a moist haze was forming. "It's going to rain tonight. I don't want to waste the rest of the day talking about stuff like that."
"Like what? You're not telling me anything. Did the lost girl see something? And could she really say something against Charlie?"
"Ben, you're asking questions I don't know the answers to. Could she have seen something or know something? Maybe. Probably. What matters is that Charlie seems to think so. That's why he started the rumors that she was just a ghost story or that she died a long time ago. He can't find her, and he doesn't want anyone else looking."
"So, he had nothing to do with her picture being on the card?"
"Not a chance. Having people think she was real and having a picture of her to help identify her if she was ever found, those are the last things Charlie would want." Tom paused. "Charlie isn't a good person, kiddo, and he's not a forgiving one. Like most people of his kind, he's motivated by fear."
"Fear? What could Charlie be afraid of?"
Tom said. "The truth. A lot of people are afraid of that." Benny nodded, even though he didn't fully understand what Tom meant.
"Can I have my card back?"
Tom took the card from his shirt pocket and studied it for a moment, then handed the card to Benny. "I can't say I'm happy to find out that Rob sold this to the printers. I asked him not to. Stirring up trouble with Charlie isn't the smartest move." Benny smoothed the card against his shirt front.
"Why do you think Mr. Sachetto painted the Lost Girl card after you asked him not to?"
"People do stupid things when they need money. He doesn't look broke. He's not. But for most people, there's never enough money."
"Is this going to cause a lot of trouble?" Benny asked.
Tom looked back the way they'd come.
"I hope not, but..."
He let the rest of his sentence hang.
"Mr. Sachetto said that you saw the Lost Girl a couple of months ago, but he said I had to ask you to tell me about her."
The trees around them were filled with birdsong, and cicadas droned incessantly in the tall grass. Tom leaned his forearms on the fence and sighed. "We haven't really talked much since we got back," he said. "I know that what we saw hit you pretty hard. I know that our relationship has changed a bit. As brothers, I mean." After a slight pause, Benny nodded. "So here's the problem, kiddo," said Tom.
and maybe you can help me sort it out. I'm not entirely sure who you are. I mean, you're not really a kid anymore, and you're not an adult. You're not the annoying brat I've been living with for the last 14 years.
Eat me, said Benny with a grin.
Zombies wouldn't eat you. They have standards. Tom pushed himself off the fence. So, you're going through all these changes, and I don't know who you'll be at the end of it.
How's this all going to lead into you telling me about the lost girl?
That's the problem. Last time I checked, you thought Charlie Pink Eye was, and I quote, the man. The hammer, too. But a few minutes ago, I saw you holding your own against Charlie. That didn't look like a friendly chat. But if there's even the slightest chance you're going to share a single word of this with Charlie or the hammer, then I can't and won't say a single word about Lila. On the other hand, if I thought that I could trust you, completely, and without reservation, then I might consider telling you the whole story.
You can, Benny began, but Tom stopped him with a raised finger.
I don't want an answer right now, Benny. I want us to do our training session, and then we'll have some dinner. We'll talk after.
Why not now?
Because you want it too much now.
Great time to go zen on me,
Tom shrugged. If I have to get to know who you are, you have to get to know who I am. Fair's fair. He opened the gate. Let's go. Benny stood outside the gate, drumming his fingers on the wooden top rail. He didn't understand Tom at the best of times, and for a few seconds he felt like he'd just missed the punchline of a joke. He looked down at the card, as if the lost girl could whisper some explanation to him.
Honestly, is it just me? Or is Tom crazy?
The lost girl's eyes held infinite answers, but he couldn't hear a word. He sighed, tucked the card into his pocket, and headed into the house. 15 minutes later, Tom tried to kill Benny with a sword. Chapter 21 Benny twisted out of the way of the sword with maybe a micron to spare. He could feel the blade slice the air. He heard the swoosh of the wind. Benny threw himself to one side and tried to roll behind the picnic table, but Tom was as nimble as an ape. He leaped onto the tabletop, dropped quickly into a crouch, and as Benny came out of his roll and started to rise, Tom stopped him with the edge of his weapon across Benny's windpipe. You're dead. Benny put a finger against the blunt edge of the wooden practice sword and pushed it away.
You cheated.
Tom lowered his sword. How do you figure that?
I dropped my sword, Benny said. I told you to give me a second.
Oh, please. Like anyone out in the ruin is going to cut you any slack?
Zoms don't carry swords.
That's hardly the point. And, as far as I know, none of the other bounty hunters do either. Tom picked up a towel and wiped sweat from his face. Now you're lying to save face. You saw one of them use a sword when we were out in the...
Okay, okay, whatever. Let me catch my breath.
Benny dropped his wooden sword and trudged over to the pitcher of iced tea and drank two cupfuls.
Besides, he said, turning back, I'd rather learn how to use a gun.
You already know how to shoot.
Not like you.
He almost said, not like Charlie, but caught himself. Last year, Charlie had given him a demonstration of pistol and rifle trick shooting at the harvest fair. Tom had watched the whole thing with narrowed eyes and a wooden face. Thinking back on that, Benny wondered if Tom was anywhere near as good as Charlie with a gun. He'd never seen his brother shoot. Tom didn't reply. He weighed the wooden bakken in his hand and cut a few slow-motion lines through the air.
Will you teach me to shoot?
Eventually, sure, said Tom. Though, you know enough now to stop one of the dead if you get into trouble. but I already told you that I prefer swords and knives. They're quieter, and they—
Don't need to be reloaded, Benny interrupted. Yeah, I remember. You've told me 15 times.
You also said sometimes quiet doesn't matter.
True, but there are a lot of times when it does.
Tom hooked the tip of his sword under Benny's and flipped it up so that it tumbled over and over in the air. It came at Benny faster than expected, and he surprised himself by getting a hand up in time to catch it. Tom grinned.
At least your reflexes are good.
Hooray for me! Tom raised his sword in a formal two-hand grip and waited until Benny finished making faces and did the same. Tom moved to his right, beginning a slow sideways circle, always keeping his sword ready. Benny shifted to his left, matching him.
Quiz time, said Tom. Do we have to?
No. You can quit and go shovel body parts into the pit. I'm easy.
Benny didn't voice the word that rose to his lips.
Define kenjutsu.
It's Japanese for sword methods, or the way of the sword, Benny said in as bored a tone as he could manage.
Tom darted forward a half step in a quick fake, and Benny stepped backward.
What does samurai mean?
To serve, said Benny.
This time he tried the same fake, but instead of retreating, Tom stepped in, parried his blade, and tapped him on the shoulder.
Blood is now pouring out of a hole where your arm used to be.
Yeah, yeah, and when I come back as a zom, I'm going to eat your brains.
Tom laughed and swung another cut, but Benny blocked it, and Benny blocked the next dozen attacks.
You're taking it easy on me.
You have to work up to full speed.
I can handle it.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you— Oh, hell.
Tom moved forward into one side, and just like that moment back in Harold Simmons' house, Benny saw his brother's body blur as Tom moved with incredible speed.